This is the Tom Hartman Program, live and exclusively on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
Well, happy Friday, TGIF. Jumaa Mubarak, Shabbat Shalom, although whatever it may be for you. Yeah, this a marvelous day and a marvelous weekend. Our quote for the day from Leonardo DiCaprio: global warming is not only the number one environmental challenge we face today, but one of the most important issues facing all of humanity. We all have to do our part to raise awareness about global warming and the problems we as a people face in promoting a sustainable environmental future for our planet. Leo DiCaprio will be with us at 10:30 this morning Pacific time, 1:30 Eastern time, and all in between. And Lila and Nadia, who directed the movie The 11th Hour, will be with us in our third hour. We'll be taking your phone calls throughout the day. Ariana Huffington is going to be with us. But first, as always on Friday, our first hour, Our good friend Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, neither a Democrat nor a Republican. I think of him as America's senator. Sanders.senate.gov, his website. Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Hey, Bernie.
How are you, Tom?
I am great. I'm having a great time here in Los Angeles. It's a beautiful day. I hope all is well with you.
Talk about beautiful days. If you were in Vermont today, then you would know what a really beautiful day is.
You know, I lived there 10 years. You're making me miss Vermont.
The only problem is beginning to feel like fall a little bit, but other than that...
Fall's a beautiful season in Vermont, too.
It is.
So Congress is in recess right now, and I know that you guys are all back in your districts getting an earful from your constituents,
right.
But Congress is going to be coming back into session fairly shortly. You got a lot on your agenda.
It will, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and I want to just briefly review some of the key issues. One of the things that I have done since I've been back in Vermont is hold a number of what we call listening sessions dealing with infrastructure and economic development. Actually, we did this before. We announced these hearings before the disaster in Minneapolis. But what we're hearing from towns all over the state of Vermont, and I know it's true all over America, is that we have hundreds of billions, if not over $1 trillion, in unmet infrastructure needs. And we have got to address those needs, or else we're going to see more bridge collapses and other failures that we have seen in recent years. We're talking now just not about bridges and roads. We're talking about the need for a new rail system in this country, because right now, as you know, we're far behind Europe, we're far behind Japan, we're even behind China in some respects, in creating the kind of rail system that we need to transport people and goods. And as we're concerned about global warming, we understand that this is important from an energy perspective as well. So we got a lot of work to do. The question is, where do you come up with $1.5, $1.6 trillion to start rebuilding our infrastructure? And that's an issue Congress is going to have to tackle. But what I should say, as we address infrastructure, as we address greenhouse gas emissions and energy efficiency as part of that process, we can create a huge number of good-paying jobs. So this is not just protecting the infrastructure for years to come. It's not only dealing with global warming. It is an important job creation element as well. So this is an issue you're going to see a lot of discussion on, and I will be aggressive on that. In terms of the economy, you know, one of the things that really bothers me about the Bush administration, it's not only what they do, but it's the kind of things that they say. They keep going around, as you have heard many times, the listeners have heard, telling us how booming the economy is. And yet we hear, we read studies that tell us that between 2001 and 2005, 90% of the households in our country experienced over a 4.2% decline in their market-based incomes. The people who are doing well in this economy are the very wealthy, and they are doing phenomenally well. The middle class is shrinking. 5 million more Americans have slipped into poverty. 6 million Americans have lost their health insurance. People are paying a fortune for a gallon of gas and for home heating oil. Cost of college has soared, and so forth. So Bush is not right, and he's distorting reality when he suggests that the economy is doing well. For the rich, it is. For every anybody else. It is not. So this whole question of how we reorder our national priorities so that we create an economy that works well for everybody certainly has got to be front and center as Congress reconvenes. Now, one of the areas that you're going to see a lot of discussion, and you and I have talked about this a lot, is trade policy.
Mm.
And you know what you're going to see? I think because of the recent headlines regarding toys coming from China, agricultural products coming from China, fish coming from China, I think there's going to be a refocus on our trade relations with China, what it means that we have a record-breaking deficit of several hundred billion dollars, what it means that we are losing many good-paying jobs from companies who are going to China, what it means that the standards in China in terms of food products and other products are very, very low compared to the United States. The result is that a lot of products coming into this country are simply not healthy. That is going to be an issue that you will hear a lot of discussion and hopefully a change in policy. It concerns me very much, not only from a national security perspective, just from a basic, the basic perspective of being a strong nation, capable of producing what we need, that if you look at industry after industry, we are more and more dependent upon foreign imports. That is an area that we should be concerned about. Tom, you're going to be hearing a lot about education. The president would like to reauthorize No Child Left Behind. I think a number of members of the Senate, members of the House, have serious concerns about No Child Left Behind, and about the amount of testing and the fact that many excellent teachers are being forced to teach to testing rather than trying to create a whole child who is curious, who wants to learn, and who is learning a broad range of areas.
Mm-hmm.
That will be an issue that will be getting a lot of attention in the Congress, and I think the American people are concerned about it. In terms of education, we have got to deal with the crisis in child care, preschool education. You got millions of kids who the day that they enter first grade are already far behind. And their parents are working, their moms are working long hours. We have got to make sure that in the economy of today, where in most families mom and dad are both working, kids get good quality preschool education at a cost that a working family can afford. That is certainly not the case today. And in fact, the way we treat our children as a nation, having the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world, is a national disgrace, and we need to shine a light on that issue. Tom, you may have seen a study on health care that came out recently, which pointed out that in terms of longevity, how long a person lives, the United States, which today spends at least twice as much per person on health care as any other nation, ranks 41st in the world. 41st.
This should be a sign that we're at the very least not getting what we're paying for.
At the very least. And it's a lot deeper than that. We not only have 46 million Americans without any health insurance, the cost of health care is soaring, we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. You know what else is going on? This system is so distorted, if you like, that we are not even producing the kinds of physicians that we need, especially in primary health care, and we have to import people from around the world to serve our health care needs. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me in terms of why we are not producing doctors. We're not producing dentists. We have a major dental crisis all over this country. We're not producing the kind of nurses, numbers of nurses that we need. It's an issue that I've been working quite hard on, and hopefully legislation that I got, the language that I got in the Senate higher education bill will carry, which will substantially increase the number of people who will be able to get into nursing schools and get degrees from there. We're working on a national health care program. Given the power of the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industry, my own view is that the way we will move toward a national health care program is when a state or a group of states goes forward and shows that a program like a single-payer system is the most cost-effective and efficient way to provide health care to all people. So we're going to be introducing legislation as soon as we get back, which will enable 10 states with different size, different regions of the country to go forward with different programs for universal health care. Some of them, I hope, will go forward with a single-payer. And if we're successful, we can become a model. Those states can become a model for the rest of the country. In terms of health care, you're going to also see coming up pretty soon an effort in the Senate to pass what we call prescription drug reimportation. Right now, we can import products from all over the world, but somehow, when it comes to the cost of lower prescription drug costs, that's not the case, and that's an issue we're going to be taking up.
That is one incredible laundry list, Bernie.
You only heard about a half of it, Tom.
You guys are going to be busy. Amazing. 16 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Our phone number, 866-303-2270. Bernie Sanders taking your calls next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
And moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid.
Yeah, it's time to stand up to the fear-mongers in this administration and in the press and say, sorry, we're not going to be afraid anymore. We will be vigilant. We will be strong. Franklin Roosevelt was right. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And enough of that fear stuff. 21 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. Our first hour, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders on with us, taking your calls. Go to the phones, Bernie.
Yep, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. David in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thanks for taking my call. It's an honor to be on with Bernie Sanders and yourself. My phone call is concerning college loan student debt. I recently received my master's degree in social work. And me and many of my fellow classmates owe $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in student loan debt. And my question to Bernie Sanders is Congress going to act to help people in helping professions such as nursing, social work, and teaching for loan forgiveness? Because we don't make $90,000 or $100,000 to be able to pay off these student loans at a good rate.
David, thank you very much for that very important question. You're right on in what you're requesting, and I have some fairly good news for you for a change. I think Congress is beginning to move in the right direction, but not far enough. Here's what's happened in the recent higher ed bill, and I'm on the committee that deals with this stuff. In the Senate, legislation was passed that would raise the Pell Grants. Pell Grants are the major source of scholarships for low and moderate income people in this country. The committee recently reported and the Senate passed legislation that would raise Pell Grants from $4,300 to $5,100 and then up to $5,300. Also, relevant to David's question, there is a provision in the bill that would provide student loan forgiveness for those people entering public service. So if you're going into teaching, you're going into law enforcement, you're going into social work, you're working for government, if you work for a period of time, I believe it's 10 years, there would be a part of that loan that would be forgiven. It is an important step forward. It doesn't go far enough. My own view is that we have to understand that college right now is not different from an economic perspective for a person than high school was 40 or 50 years ago. And as a nation, we should be investing so that every family in this country would be able to send their young people to college regardless of the income of that family. But the recent higher ed bill in the Senate takes us a step forward. The House approached it a bit differently. They're moving toward lower interest loans.
Excellent. Let's see. Pat in Encinitas, California. You're on with Bernie Sanders.
Morning, Bernie.
Good morning.
My question is about, first of all, do you think the Democrats have to really harp on the job issue in the upcoming 08 election? And which Democratic candidate do you think has a political and moral backbone to actually follow through on getting jobs back in this country? My personal pick, I like Bill and Hillary, but I don't trust them because of NAFTA and the fact that Bill was AWOL before the 06 elections. I like John Edwards. I'm from Missouri, and I think he's got a streak of Truman-esque in him. He doesn't have a salty language, and he sounds like he's on the wrong speed occasionally, but I really like John Edwards as far as the job issue. Thank you.
Well, I'm not going to be picking and choosing candidates at this time, Pat, but Edwards has been saying some very forceful things. My own view is that you're absolutely right, that despite Bush's assertions about how great the economy is, the average American knows that things are not going well. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal did a poll, and this is amazing. Here's Bush talking to us about how great the economy is. Poll shows that two-thirds of the American people believe that the U.S. economy is either in recession now or will be in the next year. That's what the American people think. And the job issue is certainly right in the middle of that perception. And one of the reasons is it's not that unemployment is terribly high, but the quality of the jobs that are out there is simply not good. We have too many people in this country working for 9, 10, 12 bucks an hour, not enough money to support a family. I believe that we have a lot of potential in terms of jobs creation, A, in moving us away from fossil fuel toward energy efficiency and sustainable energy. In fact, I've introduced legislation that I think will be incorporated into law. It was in the energy bill, which creates a job development program in terms of green technology and green jobs. Second of all, as I mentioned earlier, there is enormous job opportunity as we rebuild our infrastructure in this country. And that's not just roads and bridges, but it is schools, it is wastewater plants, new water systems, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the jobs issue is huge, and I certainly hope that we'll have Democratic candidates prepared to take on moneyed interest in going forward on that.
Yeah, and I think any Democratic candidate would be better than any Republican right now on this issue.
But that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from our Los Angeles affiliate, K-Talk. 27 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270 for your questions for Bernie, Air America Radio, and, AirAmerica.com and TomHartman.com for our live chat room. Well, I think we're ready to run now. And certainly the Senate and the House are, boy, do they have an agenda when they come back into session. An enormous amount, hopefully going to get done. We know it'll get done. Hopefully it'll get past the president's veto pen.
It's the American people, Tom, to stand up and demand that action take place on these issues. This country is in trouble. We've got to change our direction, and we need a lot of grassroots activism to make things happen.
Absolutely right, yeah, and so well said, Bernie, and thanks for reminding us about that every single week, because I get people calling in going, well, I don't think that my senator, and I'm like, have you showed up at the local Democratic Party meeting? Well, no, I don't, that's too much trouble. Okay, then stop complaining. You know, get out there and get active. Peter in Maryland, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Okay, it's nice to be on. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk about, but I'm just going to take on two things right now. One is... I have a lot of trouble keeping track of legislation, and I've been very concerned with the Wellstone bill. I was wondering what's going on with that right now.
Uh-huh.
And
that's the mental health parity bill, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
My congressman Van Hollen is pushing hard for it, but I don't think any senator has taken it on.
No, country. That's not true. It's moving.
Oh, okay.
It is moving in the Senate. As Vermont Senator, I've had some problems with it because Vermont has led the country in that area, and I did not want federal legislation to preempt stronger legislation. But I think we've resolved.
Maybe you could do an amendment for that, maybe, or something.
Well, I think we've resolved that. But to answer your question,
good.
I think to answer your question, there is good legislation in the House introduced by Patrick Kennedy. Good legislation in the Senate. I think and hope that you will see some results in the not-too-distant future.
Good one. Carolyn in Tempe, Arizona. Carolyn, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi, guys. Bernie, I'm for cloning. I wish we could clone you and Tom both. You say get active, and I have been, and I tried to go down to Congress on the corner with Harry Mitchell a couple of days ago. And we weren't allowed in. There were members of the State Democratic Party, PCs, They were all turned away. The police escorted us, made us leave the premises. And, I mean, we didn't do anything but go to what they advertised on the Democratic site, which was, you know, Congress on the corner. Talk to your congressman. Nancy Pelosi evidently was there, too. And I suppose that had something to do with it. But it was outrageous. So, and Bush is not in favor of anything that you're going to be in favor of. So how is it, again, that you're going to get any legislation, an override, his veto, to get anything passed without impeaching him?
Well, I'm not quite sure that the second follows the first. The way you get things, clearly, in the Senate, we don't even have 60 votes to cut off debate on important issues. So things are difficult. But the Republicans are not stupid, and they understand that if they keep voting against the needs of working people and the middle class, their future is going to be pretty dismal. And a lot of these guys understand it. So I think you will see an energy bill pass, for example, dealing with global warming, not as strong as I want, but it will be passed. I think in terms of the disastrous war in Iraq, it is pretty clear that more and more Republicans are trying to separate themselves from the president. In terms of the economy and the needs of lower-income people, I think you're going to see some action as well. So, Carolyn, I'm not here to tell you that we have the votes in Congress to do all that should be done, but I'm saying that we have got to move forward as aggressively as we can. We need a strong grassroots movement right now to demand that Congress do the right thing in terms of representing working people, and we need to be active in the next election.
And indeed. Larry in Vancouver, Canada, you're on the air with the United States Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you very much. You've got a good show, and it's quite an honor to talk to Senator Bernie Sanders, who I found to always be a very straight talker. And he cares about the people. I was listening to his laundry list of things that he's trying to do and everything. I think it's really great. And particularly the reason I'm calling is that I thought the way he thought, you know, to do the universal health care state by state, I thought that's really the best way to go, because in Canada, when we had our health care started, it actually started in the province of Saskatchewan, and then gradually it got more and more popular, and then it was actually taken up by the federal government and then distributed throughout the whole provinces like over 20 years.
Yes.
And it was a real struggle to get to.
Now, you're absolutely right, and I would not be honest with you if I did not have that understanding in mind as we propose our approach. That's exactly what happened in Canada. It started in Saskatchewan. It became popular. Other provinces picked it up, then the federal government picked it up, and they have today a strong national health care program. And I think that given the kinds of opposition that exists in this country, I suspect that that's the way we're going to have to go in this country.
Jim in Louisville, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Senator, for all you do.
Thank you.
I'd like to know why legislation to repeal the act or the law that gives tax breaks to corporations for exporting jobs to countries like China and India. Well, I know there hasn't been anything introduced, and I'd like to know what's being done about Halliburton.
Okay, two good questions. I myself, as a member of the House, have worked on that issue. When we talk about the shrinking of the middle class and lower wage jobs in America, one of the issues that we have got to focus on is our disastrous trade policies with China and with other countries. And it's just not blue-collar jobs anymore. It's white-collar jobs, information technology jobs. As a member of the House previously and as a senator, I will do everything that I can not only to change our trade policies, which are so unfair to American workers, asking them to compete against desperate people around the world who are making 30 or 40 cents an hour, but also it goes without saying that you have got to end corporate welfare and tax breaks that make it easier, if you can believe it, for companies to throw American workers out on the street and move abroad. It's an important question, and it is an issue that is being dealt with. In terms of Halliburton, there are a variety of investigations going on right now not only about Halliburton, but about war profiteering in general. Halliburton is perhaps a special case, because here you have a company not only that got no-bid contracts, but a company that was run for many years by the Vice President of the United States of America that has now left America and established its headquarters in Dubai. And maybe that says something about the patriotism of corporate America and maybe our Vice President, that basically these guys could say, oh, thanks for the no-bid contracts, thanks for allowing us to make hundreds of millions of dollars, but by the way, we're not comfortable staying in America anymore. And that is an issue that must be looked at.
Jay in Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. I got a question. I was caught up in a Bush bust in 2001, got laid off, and have had the uniquely American experience of working three jobs since then. And about 2 years ago, I got to the point where I was able to get a mortgage loan. Of course, that was by the subprime, and at the point, I got an ARM, and it was at a little under 7%. I felt good about that. Now I'm at 10% and kind of upset. And when I heard the news this morning that the overnight rate given by the Fed was dropped for businesses that made poor investment decisions, and I'm upset that they have the opportunity provided and offered to them by the government to get lower rates for bad decisions when I was caught up in a government decision and have no other options other than take what I get. So I'm wondering if there's anything being done about predatory lending.
Jay, that's a very important question, and obviously it ties in with the volatility in the stock market right now and in fact, the loss of the significant decline in the stock market in recent weeks. The answer is yes. There is, I think the overall concern that many of us have is that a lot of lower income people don't have access to the kind of banking system and banking and credit rates that upper income people do, and are forced to pay a significantly higher interest rate, which is causing right now, obviously, in housing, very serious problems. So, Jay, yes, this is an issue that will be, I know, looked at by a number of committees.
Bernie, just a quick story here that one of the folks in the chat room pointed out to me that's emblematic of what's going on with this administration. A Korean War veteran, Niles Reed, opened an envelope last week to learn a Purple Heart he had been approved for injuries he sustained as a Marine. There was no medal, just a certificate and a form stating that the Purple Hearts are now out of stock. He could buy one from a private vendor for $42, and he did.
That is unbelievable. If that's accurate, that is just quite. Well, I mean, aside from the right wing extremist ideology of this administration, they are also enormously incompetent in almost every area of public life.
Well, if you don't believe in government, how can you govern?
That's a good point.
That's the bottom line, I think. It's Senator Bernie Sanders with us, sanders.senate.gov, his website, airamerica.com, and tomhartman.com, our websites, our live chat room, also our blog over at airamerica.com, our message board at tomhartman.com. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders in just a moment.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. The Valley's Progressive Talk, online at www.1480kphx.com.
Fire it up, we push off, we are rolling boulders, crashing down the mirrored stairways to a blast best Montanaris. Fire it up.
9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from K-Talk in Los Angeles, where we will be at screenings tonight for four different showings, actually. I'll be doing Q&As for Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. He will be with us in the next hour. Right now, Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Richard in Vancouver, Washington, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. I read last week that the value of the U.S. dollar has been reduced 90% over the last 90 years. Is there anything that Congress can do to bring the Federal Reserve back under control? And if I may say, secession is freedom. Thank you.
Well, that's an interesting question. When I first came to Congress, a fellow named Henry D. Gonzalez was chairman of the banking committee. Tom, do you remember Henry Gonzalez?
Oh, yeah.
One of the real heroes. He was an old-fashioned Texas populist and raised that whole issue about, in fact, making the Fed more responsible to the Congress. And I can't say anything more, but that is an issue I think that should be looked at.
Yeah, the decline of the dollar. In fact, about a year ago, Kiplinger's ran a story about how Dick Cheney had moved $25 million worth of his investments into euro-denominated bonds, and was betting against the dollar. And since then, he has made 29% just in the currency exchange on that because the dollar has been collapsing. So it's like these guys know.
What a guy!
Yeah, these guys know something the rest of us need to know.
That's while at the same time his company moves to Dubai. Huh?
That's right. That's right. It's incredible.
And then he criticizes people for being unpatriotic. Well, what can you do?
Yeah. Can you imagine if it had been Bush or if it had been, Clinton or Gore? Anyhow, Brian in Redondo Beach, California. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator. Senator, I have a question that I don't know how it turns out. I want to find out if, because of what's going on, you know, you just heard what Tom said about taking in the money going across the ocean.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Because of what's going on right now, is it possible that the Senate can go back to work? Just say, okay, we're going to go back. We have far too many problems that we can't just let it sit for 2 weeks. Besides that, every day that the Senate's not in office, Congress is not in office, someone's son or daughter dies in Iraq. How can we get you to return back to work?
Well, I should tell you, Brian, some of us are working. I've been around my state, and I suspect many other members go around their state as well. And I think one of the aspects of being a member of Congress is to make sure that you are in touch with the people in your district if you're in the House or in your state. So I think members of the Senate and the House are entitled to time off to do that. Secondly, in terms of the war in Iraq, I think what you are going to see when we come back, is an effort on the part of a number of us to push this administration as hard as we possibly can toward finally ending this war and bringing our troops home as soon as possible. And that's, you know, an issue that is on the minds of many, many people. And it's an issue that we have got to address. This war is a disaster. We have a president who has no policy at all to end it. I think in terms of the defense authorization bill, you will see a lot of work being done on that.
Doug in Staten Island, New York. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, how are you, Tom and Ms. Sanders? Good to talk to you, too. You're spot on yesterday, Tom, with the discussion on the VHA, not to mix it up with the military.
Mm-hmm.
In the crisis that we had at Walter Reed. Yeah. And by the way, that quote that you give, you have nothing to fear but fear itself, there's a semicolon there. The rest of the statement says, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
That prevents us from forward motion or moving forward.
Actually, that's just one sentence in itself. I mean, they've known this for years. I mean, I think Rousseau once said, fear is worse than death because it holds the mind hostage. Anyway, listen, Bernie, I was wondering, all the problems that you discuss, they're going to rely on the demographics of who's coming along. The Medicare, the Social Security, where's the money going to come from, the baby boomer generation. And I was wondering if possibly some of the latest stats that are coming out from the problems with the health industry might be a bridge to the Republicans. You have the International Longevity Center just came out just 2 days ago. Dr. Robert Butler, he said in the last 15 years we have gone from 11th in longevity to 42nd in the world.
Yep.
This was his quote. An African-American man, sadly, in Baltimore or Harlem, New York, has a lower life expectancy now than a Bangladeshi man. And also, we also know that we are the second, we have the second highest mortality rate in the entire industrial world, second only to Latvia.
Infant mortality.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the second in the industrial world. But it's very poor. I don't know if that's.
It was second highest mortality rate in the industrial world. We're second only to Latvia. Which has gross GDP of 7,200 per person. In any event, we've now boosted our population a little bit. We've gone up to 2.1 kids per parent. But if this continues, we're not going to have anything to solve any of these problems. And I'm wondering if that could be a bridge maybe to discuss with maybe some macro-thinking Republicans, if there are any, to get some of these policies pushed through, that we have to really do something. I mean, the obesity rate, the population.
Changing health care and everything. We only have a minute left here.
Yeah,
so.
You raise a very important issue, and I certainly hope that there will be a bridge with sensible Republicans, and there certainly are many of them. The issue here that we have to understand is our problem in terms of health care is not, let me underline the word, not that we're not spending enough money. We're spending plenty of money. Our system is the most wasteful, inefficient, bureaucratic system in the world. We spend twice as much per person as any other country, and yet we have enormous problems. You've mentioned at least some of them.
And if I may interject, almost all of that waste is in the for-profit sector.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have a lot of ideas. I mean, study after study after study has shown that if you move toward a single-payer system, you can provide health care to all people without spending any more than we're currently spending. You're right, we've got to focus on obesity, we've got to focus on smoking, on exercise, making our population healthier as well.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks so much, Bernie, for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It is always great to have you on our Brunch with Bernie segment, Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Coming up next, Tim Carmichael and Leonardo DiCaprio. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
This is Katrina VandenHeuvel.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from our affiliate in Los Angeles, KTALK, KTLK. And we will have on the program at the bottom of the hour Leo DiCaprio about his movie that I'll be at tonight, four different showings of the movie that I'll be doing questions and answers for, two before and two after. And you can find all that over at where and when I'll be at tomhartman.com. Up at the top, there's a trailer that links. You can watch the trailer for the movie. There's also a link to 11thHourFilm.com, which is the film website, 11thHourAction.com, which is the action website. And if you go to my calendar, my schedule, my personal travel schedule, you'll see which theaters I'm going to be at tonight here in Los Angeles and what times. And, in fact, I think that there's even some links there to the theaters, to buy tickets online or whatever. Tim Carmichael, speaking of the 11th hour, I am one of 50 experts in the movie, or 50 folks in the expert. Leonardo DiCaprio refers to them as experts. And I guess in each one of our areas, we can all claim some expertise. Tim Carmichael certainly is an expert. He's the senior director for policy at the Coalition for Clean Air. Coalition, forcleanair.org is their website. And Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thank you so much for having me on.
Very pleased to have you with us, Tim. Tell us, first of all, about the Coalition for Clean Air. What is it that you all are doing?
So the Coalition for Clean Air is an environmental nonprofit organization. We've been around for 35 years, started in Los Angeles, and now we've expanded and we're working statewide in California. We've got offices in Fresno, Sacramento, and Los Angeles. And we're working to reduce air pollution and reduce global warming emissions, protect public health.
And the role that you're playing in the movie, The 11th Hour, Leonardo DiCaprio's new film, tell us about that.
Well, it's an honor to be a part of the project, and it just was really great. But it's an interesting experience to go through, I think a half hour, 45-minute interview, and then find out that you made the cut. And then you watch the movie, and I think I've got two sentences in there.
Yeah.
I hope everyone listening, pays attention to those two sentences.
They're the most important two sentences.
I can't claim that, and I think anyone that sees the movie will see that there are so many nuggets of wisdom in this movie and things that we all need to take to heart. I really feel like you got to see it more than one time to get it all.
I've seen the movie twice now, and the second time I saw it, I actually got more out of it than the first time, because it is such a data-rich movie, and at the same time, it's so brilliant cinematically. I mean, the visual, the music, the all the movie stuff that makes a movie is so powerful and so brilliant that it's just you know, yeah, I agree with you. It's worth seeing a couple of times and bringing 30 friends. Tim, what's the we're talking with Tim Carmichael, the senior director of policy for the Coalition for Clean Air. What's the state of air in not just in California? We have listeners all over the United States and, in fact, all over the world right now. What is the state of air on planet Earth right now?
Well, what's interesting is it's getting better in some areas and getting markedly worse in others. As developing countries industrialize and make greater use of their natural resources, whether it's coal or some other fuel or petroleum in the transportation system, and they're in most cases not using the latest and greatest pollution controls or cleaner alternative fuels, there's a significant increase in air pollution and related health impacts in China and India, Southeast Asia, in Latin and South America. And that is, you know, tragic because in Europe, in the United States, in Japan, we have developed so many wonderful technologies that could be employed much more widely than they're being used today. And it's just sad to see that we're not sharing enough of this, alternative approach to our energy supply and our transportation systems. And those are really the two main areas where air pollution comes from.
Mm-hmm. And areas where, frankly, it's not rocket science to fix them.
It's not. And, you know, there's a lot of money going into new technologies and a lot of enthusiasm about that. And I'm excited about that. But everyone needs to recognize that we've got a lot of really good, clean alternatives available today. And the trick is to make greater use of those. And whether it's with some public incentives or just individual and corporate leadership, we need to go from prototype and demonstration project to widespread use.
Yeah. Tim Carmichael, what are the human consequences of polluted air?
Well, I'll start with the human. They range from minor impacts to like your eyes watering, itchy, throat, to difficulty breathing, incidence of asthma, to, at the extreme cases, causing cancer and premature death.
Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the biosphere and the rest of life on Earth?
Well, air pollution, many forms of air pollution, damage crops and limit their ability to grow and produce crops around the planet. So we see evidence of that in forests, throughout the northeast of the United States, in eastern Europe. We see evidence of crop damage here in California, in the San Joaquin Valley, where, citrus and cotton and other crops are not producing at their potential because of the levels of air pollution. Mm-hmm. And though there's less research on this, if air pollution is harming humans as much as we know it is, it's intuitive and logical that it would be harming animals in the areas that are highly polluted as well.
Yeah, indeed. So, Tim Carmichael, the coalitionforcleanair.org, not the, coalitionforcleanair.org, the website. Tim, great work that you're doing. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks very much for having me on and appreciate it.
Great talking with you. It's 13 minutes past the hour. Our number 1-866-303-2270. It's normally Anything Goes Friday. We'll continue with some of your phone calls here. In fact, Ian in San Francisco on the line. Hey, Ian, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. The American Psychological Association is meeting here in San Francisco this weekend. And one of the things they're going to be dealing with is the issue of whether psychologists should participate in torture. And what I wanted to throw out is, there's a whole, the question that keeps coming up and nobody seems to address very often is why do they do torture? They're told by the experts it does no good in terms of getting information that can be useful, and yet they continue to do it. And what I want to throw out is the possibility that what we're dealing here, and I'm not an expert in this, but what we may be dealing with here is actual sadists. I mean, like Bush.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there's the stories on the web about when he was a kid, he blew up frogs with firecrackers.
Yeah.
And when he was in college, he volunteered to brand the new pledges with, red hot coat hangers.
Yeah. And Dick Cheney likes to kill small animals that are incapable of even flying very long distances, clipped wings and drive them out to where they've been carefully placed so that he can kill them. I mean, it's just, yes, at a certain level, I think that there is a bizarre sadistic streak through some of the people who torture or who advocate torture or who put into place policies that encourage torture.
Sorry.
But also, I would indict our media. I mean, I can't tell you how many action movies that I've seen, and it's a genre that I like. It's just good, dumb entertainment, right? The old Schwarzenegger film kind of thing, or Bruce Willis or whatever. I confess, it's my weakness. And one of the subtext to the movie is that if you punch somebody hard enough, they'll tell you what you need to know. And when you're dealing with somebody who's an ideologue, somebody who a true believer, particularly somebody who believes in an afterlife and thinks that that's more important than the present life, that ain't going to work.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's hit me is that nobody in the main media, nobody seems to say, well, all the experts say it doesn't work, it doesn't get you good information, and yet they still do it, and they're pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And then you ask yourself, well, why would someone do it if it doesn't get what they say they want to get? Well, the reason they might do it is because they're actually simply sadists.
Yeah, could be. And then there's the other possibility. I mean, in some countries, you see torture being used against people, not because they want the truth, but because they simply want a scapegoat. And person A will provide person B, both of them being members of an unpopular movement. I mean, I certainly saw this when I was in Uganda. You see this a lot in terribly underdeveloped countries where you've got basically dictators. They just want to pin the tail on a donkey. They don't care if the donkey's the right donkey. They just want a donkey to pin the tail on. And so they go after somebody, and they torture person A. He names person B, and boom, crime solved, even though person C did it. 27 minutes past the hour, or 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative, this is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Golden days, a glimpse of stocking, looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
It's our Anything Goes Friday, although we're taking a slight departure today and having a few guests on. Because this new movie's coming out, and I think it's a big deal, frankly. 21 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, and broadcasting live from Los Angeles from KTalk, our affiliate here. And Joe in Atlanta, Georgia, you are on the air, Joe.
Hi, Tom. Say, can you explain the difference to me of what the difference is between betting on an NBA game that you're a referee on and betting against a foreign currency when you're vice president?
That's a good question. I guess morally, there's no difference at all. Legally, obviously, you can do anything you damn well please. I mean, here, let me extend it even farther. Did you know that in Tom DeLay's office, when he was in the House of Representatives, there were guys in his office, people who worked for him, and one of the benefits of working for him, one of the spiffs that they got, this was from interns up to senior officials, one of the spiffs that they got was they were able to read legislation before it went to the floor, before it went to committee. So they knew that things were coming down the road. They knew that in all probability, because of a particular earmark or a particular piece of legislation, a particular company was going to get a contract that would drive their stock value up. These guys were day trading using computers in Tom DeLay's office on their own personal accounts and making money day trading using inside information. And when Brian Baird, the congressman from Washington State, who'd been in Congress for like 14 years and had no idea that this was going on in Tom DeLay's office, and not just Tom DeLay's office, there were a couple of dozen Republicans who were doing this. When he found out about it, he tried to introduce legislation to make it illegal because there's this exemption in the insider trading laws that exempts members of Congress.
Oh, God.
It's like totally bizarre. And he tried to get that through the Republican Congress last year, and the Republicans shot it down. as I recall. In fact, we had Brian Baird on this program talking about it. So your point about Dick Cheney trading, you know, moving all his assets into euros a year ago, as according to Kiplinger magazine and other reports, and now, of course, the value of anything that got moved into euros a year ago is up by 28-29%. Not that different from, you know, betting on a fixed horse race or whatever, or betting on a horse race if you own the track. Yeah, point well taken, and we all ought to be horrified by it. And I guarantee you, again, as I said, everybody, remember Whitewater? Whitewater was supposed to be about a land deal, and the allegation turned out not to be true. It turned out Bill Clinton lost money, but the original allegation of the Republicans was that because Bill Clinton was governor, he had some influence in the value of the land or zoning or something. Turned out none of that happened. But it's, you know, that's what they accused Bill Clinton of. Jennifer in Laverne, California. Hey, Jennifer, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have to say that I'm very concerned, and I think we all should be very concerned about the Jose Padilla case.
Yes.
Because that was obviously a rigged, it was a rigged process. And to bring Bin Laden tape in there, which had nothing to do with Jose Padilla, in the middle of it to sway the jury and to use all kinds of intercepted messages, which really had nothing, had more to do, it seems to me, with a relief organization, but because you might be contributing and to a worthy cause, to a charity, and then 20 years later, Bush declares it to be a you're helping to fund terrorism. This is all ridiculous.
Jennifer, you and I were not in the courtroom. What we do know, you know, from the news reports is there were some 300,000 wiretapped telephone conversations. Six of them included Jose Padilla. Here's my concern, frankly, whether or not he signed the application to join the terrorist organization, which sounds pretty bizarre in and of itself. Dear Al Qaeda, I would like, you know, what is it, a multiple choice test you take? Is there an essay question? Three reasons why I'd like to be a terrorist. But in any case, whether or not he filled out this application to become a terrorist that had his fingerprints on it, even though it apparently wasn't in his handwriting, or whether, you know, et cetera. None of that has anything to do with his planning to set off a dirty bomb in the United States.
Well, that charge was dropped.
I know.
That charge was dropped.
But see, here's the point. Nobody mentions that, Jennifer. Nobody mentions that. When the national news mentioned, you know, I was watching the newscast last night, and maybe one happened that I didn't see, and I'm sure Keith Olbermann mentioned it because he's one of the few guys who does decent news. But pretty much everybody else was saying Jose Padilla was convicted of terrorism, blah-de-blah, and that left the impression in people's minds that Bush was right to throw this guy in, to torture this guy for 6 years. I mean, they broken him. They've turned him into a shell of a man. He's a piece of furniture, not only was he never guilty of, he had never even thought of doing the things that they were running around trying to scare the hell out of us, trying to terrorize us by saying that he was all about when, in fact, he wasn't all about it. So,
but, Tom, I also have to say that the Congress has let us down because under the Constitution, the Congress has the right to make laws concerning detainees and prisoners of war. And this Congress has completely let us down. They could close Guantanamo. They should go over there and see who are the prisoners in the Iraqi prisons, and I'll bet you they're 99% Iraqi people and not Al-Qaeda. We have been lied to. People are being tortured. The people of the United States need to be very concerned about this. And also, under the Constitution, it doesn't say that only U.S. citizens have rights. It says persons.
Right. And persons are people. Yes, absolutely, Jennifer. Thank you very much. And although, you know, I'm not yet ready to write off all of Congress. There's still some good people in Congress. It's just that they need to know that we're with them. We have to get out there and get politically active, including on issues like the environment. Leonardo DiCaprio coming up next. Stick around.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Wake up and shake it up, America. From north to south, from east to west, from sea to shining sea. Our government is a fight for we the people who can't ignore that we shall reap what we sow, so we better sow. Tell me.
Yeah, and sowing carefully has an awful lot to do with our environment and the world around us. And just an absolutely brilliant movie is opening today on that topic. The 11th hour, 11thhour.com, the website for it. Great reviews in today's Los Angeles Times, the New York Times. There's even a video review of it over at the New York Times, Salon Magazine. And with us, Leonardo DiCaprio, the guy who put the movie together and stars in it. Leonardo DiCaprio, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. How are you? It's great to be on your show. I'm a huge fan of it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm a huge fan of your work as well. You're extraordinary. You've had a lot of success in your life, and I know it's come literally from a lifetime of hard work. And it's often so easy for people who've had a lot of success to just, you know, spend their time on the French Riviera or partying or whatever, or you know, working at what brought them more success. You've taken a different direction with this movie. What has moved you to take this extraordinary step of issuing what is literally a global wake-up call on the issues facing humanity by making this movie?
Well, I suppose it's by being sort of a closet environmentalist my entire life. I remember being very young and watching, you know, documentaries on the rainforest and rainforest depletion and the loss of species there at a very young age, wanting to really do something about it when I got older, and of course I became an actor, and this movie is really the infusion of those two worlds, my passion about being an environmentalist and my experience in the world of filmmaking, and the intent was to get some of the greatest minds in on this issue cohesively together in an uninterrupted form to be able to really speak freely about issues that they've devoted their life to. And it was a reaction in a lot of ways from seeing the disconnect that seems to happen in mainstream media between issues like global warming and mankind's effect on it. I did a documentary in the late 90s where I actually got to interview President Clinton and sit down in the White House, and then aired on ABC. And the whole issue kind of became a moot point at the end of the day. No one really talked about mankind's effect on this issue. It became almost as if, well, who knows, a meteor could hit the Earth as well, and it'd be just as probable as global warming being a reality. And I really wanted to get, you know, some of the greatest people in the world that have really, you know, attached themselves to this issue to be able to speak freely and uninterrupted and not have to argue whether global warming was a reality anymore, because the science is now there.
Yeah, in fact, you know, there are folks who are trying to say that, well, there's still a debate on this issue. Speak to that debate issue for a moment.
Well, you know, we're talking about the overwhelming majority of the scientific community in agreement that mankind has had a role on this issue, that we are affecting this issue, that like our carbon emissions have now gone to an extent where there's no turning back. And the truth of the matter is that whether you believe in this issue or not, whether you believe in the consensus of the scientific community, you can't argue with things like wanting to be less reliant on foreign oil. You can't argue with issues like wanting to have cleaner air and cleaner water. So it really is a unifying issue in a lot of different ways. This is a human issue, a human rights issue. And in the film, we talk about that. So, you know, hopefully enough people will go out to see the film and really take an hour and a half and listen to what a lot of these people, including yourself, have to say in the movie.
Yeah. One of the points you make in the movie is that the environmental crisis the planet is facing is far more a crisis of humanity than a crisis of planet Earth. Why and what does that mean?
Well, we talk about this in the film. It's a cultural shift that needs to happen. We've somehow along the way become very disconnected with nature in our modern industrialized world. We talk about consumption and how the driving force nowadays seems to be the economy. And in doing that, we have literally tapped out our planet's resources. And we need to, you know, make a shift in our modern world to renewable energy. And we talk about energy as being the key to all of these things. We need to be a nation powered by alternative energy. We need to be a nation powered by solar and wind power. And the great irony here and the great tragedy is that these technologies are now there. And as we say in the film, we can reduce the human imprint on the world by 90% with the technologies that are already in place. And that's the great tragedy, this disconnect that's happened in the modern world that we live in the sense that, you know, our political leaders, our corporate leaders haven't implemented these technologies into our daily lives. It would be a wonderful world where we wouldn't need to think about having to buy a hybrid car or getting the right light bulbs or buying the right appliances, that these things were already unconsciously a part of our daily lives. And that's been the great failure of our political leaders and our corporate leaders. And I think, as we say in the film, it's about time to change that.
We're talking with Leonardo DiCaprio. His movie, The 11th Hour, opening in Los Angeles and New York tonight, and other cities to come. 11th Hour Film, 11thhourfilm.com, the website for it. There's also a trailer there, and there's a trailer over at tomhartmann.com for those of our listeners who are familiar with that website as well. In the movie, you say we have to act now. We don't have the time to debate and dither any longer. Why not wait for more certainty and new inventions and technologies and things?
Well, like I say, the technologies are now there, but it is this generation truly that needs to be the generation to implement some of this change. We talk about how, you know, in prior people's movements in the past, you know, it's taken 10 to 20 to 30 years to galvanize people into actually implementing some of this change, but we don't have that amount of time, and I think we're going to see nature remind us in many, many different ways that that's not the case, that if we don't implement this stuff today, future generations are gonna pay the price.
Yeah.
And that's the great tragedy of what's going on nowadays. But the inspiration, what we talk about in the movie, is that this is a worldwide movement. There are millions of people around the world that are really working cohesively together to try to solve a lot of these problems. And the whole reason for making this movie is it's just about awareness. It's about getting people to understand that every time you pay for something, you're essentially endorsing the way that company does business. You're either endorsing new technologies, green technologies, or you're not. And you not only can vote with your dollar, but you have to vote for political leaders that, of course, are going to try to implement these things into our daily lives.
Yeah, one of the points made by one of the folks in the movie was, you know, how Franklin Roosevelt completely retooled the American economy to go into World War II, and we need to do something like that now.
Yeah, it absolutely needs to be that extreme.
Yeah. And let's talk for a moment about the making of the movie. What was the process? What went into this thing? I mean, this is first of all, if I can just say, this is a stunning movie. It's visually stunning. The music is extraordinary. The technical end of it. Obviously, you know your trade really, really well. How did it come about, and how did you pull this thing together?
Well, it was hundreds and hundreds of hours of. We didn't have a camera crew that basically went around the world and got to shoot some of this amazing footage that's in the movie. We sat in an editing bay and took stock footage from, you know, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, a lot of these great nature documentaries that have done this work in the past, and infused them together with, 60 different experts on the issue, including yourself, of course. And you have a great piece in the movie, by the way. I'm sure you've seen it.
Thank you. Yeah. I was honored.
No, but I do also want to mention that, on a side note, your book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, was really one of the inspirations for me, anyway, to make this movie, because you really got me as a reader to take a step back and really try to understand how this all came about. You know, where oil is extracted from, the light that fell on the fields was the most humanity could use in a certain amount of time, and until we actually started taking this ancient sunlight out of the ground, you know, was when our population exploded on this mass levels, and, you know, has led us to the situation that we're in today. So I want to thank you for your book, truly. It really made me want to take a different perspective on this documentary as far as mankind's relationship to the planet and the resources that we use. Anyway, so we got to essentially spend hundreds of hours in the editing room trying to infuse many, many brilliant quotes from many, many brilliant people and try to put that into an hour and a half format that actually had a narrative. And that was the biggest difficulty. It was really making people emotionally affected by, you know, all this information. And it had to have a story at the end of the day. And the experts and the people in the movie really dictated what this movie ultimately became. We had a rough idea, like I said, about what we wanted this documentary to be, but ultimately it was all the people involved that created the plot point, in other words. And that plot point, well, people should go see what that plot point is, ultimately.
Indeed. Yeah, they should. And it really is the choices we're facing and the opportunities we're facing. I mean, there are times in this movie, as in any good movie, where you feel just, you know, almost horrified. And then there are times when you're like, wow, I mean, just thrilled. It's the emotional range of this movie is extraordinary, as well as the facts in it. Leonardo DiCaprio, you have created a masterpiece, and thank you.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate your efforts, and you really are the voice of reason nowadays and on the radio waves, and I'm going to continue to listen to your show. It's a fantastic one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Leonardo DiCaprio, the movie The 11th Hour, 11thhourfilm.com. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
These United States, we're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed? Who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
Yes, Merle Haggard. Let's rebuild America. I'm telling you, when Bush has lost Merle Haggard, he's lost America. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. on the line with us. Hey, Ellen, what's up? Ellen?
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay. There's an interesting story that is now floating around Washington that the White House may name Eritrea a state sponsor of terrorism by helping Al-Qaeda. Now, I happen to be one of the few Washington-based journalists that have ever been to Eritrea. And I went there in 1994 with the U.S. Agency for International Development, which was then touting its relationship with the government of Eritrea, although, frankly, they were giving a very measly amount of money.
Isn't Eritrea in sort of central northern Africa?
It's in the Horn of Africa, right above Kenya and what's the name of that other country, and it's right on the border of the Sudan.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, I was on the border of the Sudan, on the Eritrea side, but in a refugee camp there.
Right.
And I will tell you that, essentially, it's an interesting example. If the Eritrean government is sort of going to the dark side, so to speak, it's, in my view, because we really didn't help them out in the degree that we could have. They're in a dispute now with Kenya, but the other country that's there that I'm just having a quick block of my mind with. But it completely got deforested in their internal wars in the early, late 80s and early 90s. And this is an example of how I think a relationship went down the tubes, that we're now, these guys were being touted as a great example of how America's helped them, and now we're thinking of calling them state sponsors of terrorism.
You know, you would think that we would learn. You see actual terrorist organizations going out and winning the hearts and minds of people in rural areas throughout the Middle East by building hospitals, building schools, and
exactly,
providing a social safety net for people. And we think that we can go in and win their hearts and minds by dropping bombs on their heads. And then when it doesn't work, we sit around and go, gee, this doesn't work. Let's call them terrorists.
Exactly. And, I mean, frankly, there's nothing that a little bit of more money in Eritrea would not have cured in terms of Americans helping them out. They are a desperately poor country.
Yeah, but see, that sounds too much like socialism for the Republicans in Congress.
Helping
other people?
It would go
a lot
further had we done that. So anyhow, that's my comment on that. I also want to talk about the White House, two things today the White House talked about, and this was Gordon Jonro's gaggle this morning, basically saying that the Fed cutting the discount rate from 6.25 to 5.75, the White House said they would not comment on what the Fed does because the Fed is independent, and that the advisors of the White House are going to keep the president up to date. The other thing that they did comment on today was the Russians. And as you know, the Russians have resumed their strategic bombing patrol or bomber patrols. And all the White House would say, and of course Bloomberg yesterday ran a very interesting story about the weaponry and how much they're increasing the military.
Let's explain just for a second what that means. My understanding is that what this means is that the Russians have put into the air their equivalent of our B-52s loaded with nuclear weapons, continuously flying around waiting for any opportunity or any order from Mr. Putin to pull the trigger, push the button, whatever, and drop the bombs on the United States or Europe.
Well, yes, the question is whether they really have real nukes in them or whether they're just, you know, example nukes.
Right.
You know, we never know
example
that.
Nukes, placebo nukes.
But I will tell you that that it's interesting that the Gordon Jonro said today, well, we have good relations with the Russians. These are internal decisions made by the Russians. Didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And, you know, Mr. Putin, we looked in his eyes and we trust him.
Well, and oddly, ever since Bush had a meeting with Putin, he's been having vertigo from this unknown infection he seems to have in his head. Remember that? That came out of his medical, he's got this inner ear infection, the
right.
Viral inner ear infection that they can't figure out what the virus is. You think it might be polonium?
I'm not that paranoid. I'm not that paranoid yet.
I'm joking.
One last thing.
But you never know.
Right. Well, the other last thing is that Gordon Jonro said today, again, on the issue of Mr. Mueller, the FBI director, and his White House notes contradicting the attorney general's, he has nothing to add to it. Nothing to add to that discussion.
Oh, that's interesting. In other words, he's not backing away.
That's right.
So does that mean, I mean, the bottom line here is, or this, the story that is told by this is that Andrew Card, then the White House chief of staff, and Alberto Gonzalez, then the White House counsel, the White House lawyer, tried to subvert or disrupt the American form of governance. They tried to do an end run around the attorney general or actually tried to manipulate him into doing something because he was on this massive morphine drip and was so stoned and so in pain that he could hardly think. And the director of the FBI is saying, yeah, that's what happened?
It looks like there's a conflict between what Mueller's saying clearly in his private notes, and a lot of that's also been redacted, and what the AG is saying, and the White House, no comment. Non-com, as they say.
Right, the AG being the current Attorney General,
Gonzalez. Mr. Gonzalez.
Yeah. Fascinating. And Mr. Rove is going to be on Meet the Press this weekend?
Not just Meet the Press, I think he's doing two or three of the Sunday shows this week.
Oh, man. He is.
Can you imagine?
Well, you know, I guess so. I mean, I just think it's a shame that people like Amy Goodman are not, you know, being, or Katrina VandeHeuvel are not the ones being interviewed. I mean, there's some, you know, or some of the more progressive members of Congress or the Senate, Bernie Sanders should be on all these shows.
Well, you know, they have their top 20 people, and that's about it.
Yeah, 19 of them are conservatives. But anyway, Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com. Ellen, thanks for the report today.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. Stick around. The 11th hour, up next.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. The Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Lila Connors Peterson and Nadia Connors, two sisters who are the directors of The 11th Hour, a 2007 feature film documentary created, produced, and narrated by Leonardo DiCaprio on the state of the natural environment, are here in the studios with us at K-Talk in Los Angeles. And Lila, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. So glad you're here. We're here. Sorry.
Yeah. But all
glad
of the
you're
above.
In our movie.
And Nadia, great to have you here, too.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk for a minute about the making of this movie and the, you know, how this thing came about and what was involved. I don't know which of you wants to take that.
Well, Nadia, Leo, and myself had long conversations about the state of the world, and what we were concerned about was the state of the debate in the country and how it was just not dealing with the state of the environment. And so we said a film needed to be made. And what we wanted to do, and specifically Leo really liked your book, you know, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and that was a guiding light in this project, as well as David Orr's book, The Last Refuge, and Kenny Alzabell from Bioneers. And we basically took some of these pieces and put them together in this narrative that Leo helps punctuate throughout. And we interviewed about 71 people, 150 hours of interview footage, which is incredible. I mean, just incredible material, and distilled it down to 91 minutes, which is about a year in the edit bay.
Wow.
And that was quite a journey. We've ended up with 11th hour, and I think it tells the tale of humanity ignoring the disintegration of the Earth's life support systems and really making a call to our inner, you know, the inner impulse of love and survival and saying, hey, you know, this is important, life is important. Mm-hmm. We all are important. Let's save ourselves and the world together.
Yeah. And the movie is opening today in Los Angeles and New York. And Nadia, you were telling me this morning that you had 700 high school kids who came to see it.
It's very exciting because it was the first official public screening, you know, here at the Cinerama Dome in Los Angeles, and we're playing at the Arclight. And 700 high school students came. Global Green got them tickets, and they all showed up, and it was incredibly hopeful, you know, to see this new generation. And I said to them, you know, when I was in high school 20 years ago, we were hearing about global warming, ozone depletion, rainforest loss, all of these issues were there. And I thought this was going to be the issue of my generation. And 20 years later, we have watched corporations and governments consistently deny and ignore what is going on and basically keep us consumers and encourage us to be consumers, and we've lost a certain aspect of our citizenship. So I think the environmental issue, and this is what I said to them, and there was just kind of a resounding applause because it speaks across all lines. This is not just about the environment anymore. This is about empowerment and taking back what's been taken away from us.
Yeah.
And that message is incredibly important to this generation, to anyone that's alive right now. But it is a human rights and social justice issue as well. And I think the fact that these ideas are converging around the environment, we have a chance now to really tip it to the next level.
Yeah. Leonardo in the movie says we're facing a convergence of crises. And that's a very, very strong way of putting it. One of the experts in the movie talks about how every living system on the planet right now is in decline. That the last time that happened was when the dinosaurs vanished. Lila, there's a word used in the movie that did not, to the best of my knowledge, appear in Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. I think of this movie as the next step. This movie picks up where Al Gore's movie left off and does so brilliantly. And that word is extinction.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
Well, I think that what hasn't been discussed and what needs to be discussed is that the life support systems, when they decline, it impacts not just the spotted owl and the trees and the frogs we hear about it, but it impacts us most very directly. And so that human extinction's on the table here. We are dealing with that possibility. And that's a horrific and terrifying thought. It is unacceptable to have human extinction even on the table. We need to take that off the table and ensure that future generations will live in a beautiful world for a very long time. And what's so exciting, actually, is that we know how to do that. We know how to secure the future. We have the solutions. They're on the shelf, renewable energy, biomimicry, you know, even basic conservation. These things can help us reduce our human footprint on planet Earth. If we continue as business as usual, we are really taking away future generations' ability to sustain themselves. They will not have food. They will not have energy. They will have polluted water and air. Reproduction will become difficult. So these are real scenarios, and it was a shock to us that human extinction became a theme throughout the interviews. And so, to be clear, we didn't go into this project thinking about human extinction. It's what we learned, and it was shocking.
Yeah, one of the points that was made is that 99.999% of all species that have ever appeared on this planet are now extinct.
Mm-hmm.
That extinction is a normal part in many ways of the evolution and change of species. I mean, all of the primate, most of the primate species that preceded us are gone, you know, Astropithecus or whatever. It's a, can't even pronounce half of them. And if we're not careful, that'll be our fate. I mean, it's, you know, that's the really kind of whoa in the movie. And then Nadia, we get into in the movie, or you all get into the movie, in the movie, what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a, gee, wouldn't it be nice, or gee, maybe if we could get some, you know, another Albert Einstein were to be discovered among our college population today, he or she might have the answer. But what can be done now? What's it going to take?
That was another revelation in the film, but this one was the exciting one. Mm-hmm. And that was that we do have technology, and that we can lessen our impact upwards of 90% on this planet with existing technology today. We're talking about issues of scale of implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to find the political will to put these into place. So what I came into making this film not knowing that we had a lot of solutions. And this is one of the biggest problems ever humanity has faced. And to know
the end of humanity is a big problem.
and the fact is we have the solutions and we're not implementing them is maddening. And so
yeah.
I think that's where the disconnect is, and that's what we're trying to do in the film is mm-hmm. say, well, if we have the solutions and we know the problem, what's missing?
Yeah.
And I guess what we came across was this concept of denial and the fact that most people are in denial of this reality. And it really, media hasn't done a great job to pierce this bubble. And
oh, it's worse than that. Media has aggressively ignored it.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it doesn't sell Kleenex, or it doesn't sell, you know, Barbie dolls or whatever. You know, not to pick on any particular products, but who wants to be the sponsor of, you know, a bummer show or something? Now, the fact of the matter is that what you've done with this movie is not make a bummer show. I mean, I walked out of the theater the first time I saw this thinking, wow, you know, there is so much we can do and so much that actually is being done. I mean, you're actually encouraged by what is actually being done.
Right.
And yet at the same time, one of the most important points, and Lila, let me toss this to you, that's in the movie, because this is kind of at the core of this radio program, is that it's going to take... This is not something that is going to be solved by each one of us replacing the light bulbs in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's stuff we need to do. But it's not going to be solved by that.
No, it's not.
This is going to take some major political action, and that's going to take some major political will, and that's only going to happen if enough of us raise enough hell, which means get all of your friends to this movie tonight. But beyond that...
It's the next civil rights movement, essentially. I mean, this is a broad-based movement that has to happen, and it has to happen quickly. It has to happen now. We all have to pull together, come across, you know, lines that were divided. This is a unifying issue. This is a human issue. We can do it. We have to reach out and save our local communities. Start there. I mean, look where your water comes from. How does your food produce? Support the clean production of everything that you buy. You know, this is all hands on deck time, like David Orr says in the movie. And, you know, it's a big call.
Yeah, and you guys have a website, 11thhouraction.com.
Yeah. Yes, and that's where you can go to see, to join together and create a profile about the action you're taking. Maybe you're putting solar on your local high school or elementary school or whatever it is. Declare it there and we'll know about it.
It's virtually a social network spot. I mean, this is extraordinary. 11thhouraction.com. Yeah. And there, I put a link up to it up at the top of TomHartmann.com. And I would encourage any of our listeners who have websites, blogs, whatever it may be, go check out these websites, 11thhourfilm.com and 11thhouraction.com, and put some links up. Get some people out there. And tonight I'll be at the, at the Arclight in
Hollywood,
and I'll be at the Landmark West in L.A. I'll be at the Landmark West for the 5 o'clock and 7:30 shows, and in the Arclight for the 7:30 and 10:30 shows tonight, the 11th
hour.
Fantastic. Nadia, Lila Connors-Peterson, Nadia Connors, thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom.
The Tom Hartmann Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
As we lie beneath the stars, we realize how small we are. If they could love like you and me, imagine what the world could be.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour, broadcasting live from K-Talk, our Los Angeles affiliate, the Los Angeles Air America, and, well, Progressive Talk affiliate, let's say. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Jonathan in Manhattan, New York. Hey, Jonathan.
Hello, Tom.
What's up?
First, I want to thank you for inviting me as one of your listeners to the 11th hour showing you had last week. It was really good.
Oh, you showed up. Isn't that an amazing movie?
It is. It's extremely impactful, and it ends on such an uplifting note.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if I could get you to repeat an answer you gave at the Q&A directly afterwards. When someone asked you which of the candidates, because we're getting inundated with candidates right now for presidency, who's doing right on this issue, who can we trust, who should we put our support behind, and the answer you gave to that was just inspiring and important. I think everybody should get a chance to hear that.
Okay. Well, the answer I gave, if my memory is still functioning, because that had been a very long day, was that it doesn't much matter that we've got. Well, actually, it does matter if you Republican versus Democrat. If you put James Inhofe in there, we're all toast. I mean, that could be the end of the world. But all of the Democratic candidates, I think, are viable. And some have better positions on the environment than others. But the bottom line is that politicians, the very nature of politicians is that they react to the people. That's how democracy was designed in the United States. That's how it was designed in Greece 3,000 years ago. That's how it was designed here 231 years ago. And it actually, you know, it's not instantaneous. It doesn't always seem to work exactly the way we want. Sometimes it's a very frustrating process. But the bottom line is if enough of us get out there and start marching down the street, literally or metaphorically, you know, marching down the blogs or marching down the letters to the editor or marching down the phone calls to the talk show hosts or whatever. If enough of us get out there, enough of us get active, some politician is going to see that huge parade going down the street and say, whoa, look at all those people. I'm going to make that parade my parade. And they're going to run out in front and hoist a flag and say, I'm the leader of this parade. And everybody will say, okay, cool, you're the leader of this parade. And that politician will then make that change in the political system. And without the parade, the change is not going to happen. And so whoever is elected president of the United States, and for that matter to the House and to the Senate, in the 2008 election, and not to mention the politicians we have right now, we need to be the parade. We need to be the ones pushing them. We need to be the ones bringing these issues up over and over and over again. Is that what I said?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what you said.
Okay.
If I could say one last thing.
Sure.
Now that DiCaprio and others are really taking up this environmental cause, it'd be nice if we could have Al Gore back.
Yeah, as president of the United States, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, Al Gore, the only president of the United States who never served as president of the United States. Yeah.
Yeah,
spot on, Jonathan. Thank you for the call. Mike in Queens, New York. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. Did you catch that economyincrisis.org piece today, China's not the problem?
I haven't looked at it today. I look at it fairly regularly. In fact, we had the guy who edits that on last week for our Best of the Rest of the News segment, but I haven't looked at it today.
It's a real good piece. I suggest everybody read it. And this one line over here tells it all. How U.S. tariffs today would be imposed on offshore production of U.S. firms. The era of offshoring corporations not constituency for tariffs. In other words, you know, it's not China's the problem. It's the U.S. companies who go to, like, Cayman Islands, put their office over there, and put the building, the plants themselves in China,
right,
so they don't pay anything.
Right, exactly, and it's you, and that is only possible because of U.S. laws that make that possible, and without those laws, that wouldn't be possible. I mean, it should be criminal. What Halliburton did by spinning off KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, and making it a Cayman's Island corporation so that they could take our tax dollars for rebuilding Iraq with a guaranteed profit attached to it, and know that they wouldn't have to pay any taxes to the United States on it. I mean, that is just so wrong. It's mind-bogglingly wrong. Peter in Brick, New Jersey. Hey, Peter, just a half a minute here before we got to take a break. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I don't know if you remember me. I saw the movie with you over in New York.
The 11th hour.
I was moved very, very strongly by the movie. I actually got together with the website from my local Democratic Party. I'm going to the luncheon this weekend. And going to be a part of changing my Democratic Party. And that movie was amazing. I don't know if you remember, I was the one that kind of broke down when I asked a question at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
That movie, you were right. It is an emotional roller coaster. It has the problem and it also has the solution, which I was so moved by. And I am actually off my ass now and moving through the society to be part of the answer, not the problem.
Good on you, Peter. Good on you.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for the call, and thanks so much for what you're doing. I salute you. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Arianna Huffington coming up next. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. The Valley's Progressive Talk, online at www.1480kphx.com.
Anything goes. He won't eat a chusha for Josh and a chushu shusha le pongi ni dali da. Anything goes.
Well, apparently anything goes if you're on a mine in the United States of America. The BBC reporting mine officials in Utah have suspended indefinitely underground efforts to reach six trapped miners after a cave-in left three rescuers dead. Attempts to locate the men from above ground by drilling into the mountain will continue, but hopes are fading. This, the BBC report. The cave-in, which killed three mine workers and injured six more, resulted from seismic activity, officials said. No contact has been made with the six trapped miners. Now, that's the main arc of the story. There is a larger story, frankly, in my mind, and the mind of many, that has gone largely unreported and uncovered by the mainstream media, the corporate media in the United States. And one of the places where you can find a very, very good take on this and a lot of good coverage of it is over at the Huffington Post. Arianna Huffington, who is the editor, publisher of the Huffington Post, also the co-host with Mark Green of 7 Days in America, is on the line with us. Arianna, welcome to the program.
Catherine's doing a good job, but she was wrong. It was
Arianna?
There's a change.
Apparently, Arianna's on another phone call.
Not a thing about that.
Okay. Lauren, you're going to have to find out when Arianna's going to be available to go on with us. So, anyway, this frankly concerns me. I don't know how to say that beyond that. Adam in New York City. Hey, Adam, welcome to the program. You wanted to comment on the mine disaster.
Good. Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm not actually listening to the show, but I called in to talk to you because, and you're talking about it. That's great. I'm sick to my stomach about it. I don't know if you saw Keith Olbermann last night, but he's the only one. And he brought, I didn't remember, but this guy Stickler, the head of MSHA, was recess appointed by Bush, right?
Right.
And when you have these press conferences or when you're listening to things, you know, when Bob Murray's up there, none of the media, they're not saying, well, you know, who's overseeing MSHA? This guy, this corporate executive that was recess appointed.
Right,
by
the Mine Safety and Health Administration.
Yeah. And the profits of these mines, that thing was mined out. They were going for just one more teaspoon of coal. And look at all the miners they've lost right now and the six that are stuck down there.
Right.
And no one's speaking out. I mean, yeah, Arianna Huffington, but no one in the mainstream media, no one at the press conferences. Where's Bush? He appointed him. Have you heard anything from the president?
Yeah. Well, you haven't heard anything from him because the stenographers of the White House press corps have not asked the question, the really hard questions, and they won't, you know, as far as I can tell, unless enough of us start saying, hey, why don't you guys ask some reasonable questions? Arianna Huffington, who we introduced just a moment ago, the publisher of Huffington Post, co-host with Mark Green of 7 Days in America. Arianna, you're available now.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I'm on a cell phone, but I hope you can hear me. And thank you so much for doing this story.
Well, that's fine. No, thank you so much for doing this story. I was surprised that frankly there was so little coverage of this, and you just came out with both guns blazing. Tell us your take on what's going on with the mine in Utah.
Well, right now, you know, the question that I'm asking in a post I just put up on the Huffington Post is, why did it take so long for the media to begin to change the coverage of the story? Remember, up until last night, it was all the four folksy mining boss, Bob Murray, and he was kind of dictating the news agenda. And suddenly, last night, it took the death of three miners and the injuring of six more to bring in some real scientists, some experts who are refuting, really, finally, what Murray had been saying, because remember, from day one, he was saying this was an earthquake. which is what mining bosses have been saying forever, to basically avoid responsibility for their safety records.
Well, I guess... Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I guess when you carve out a huge chunk of earth, you know, take all the coal out, so you've got this giant, you know, multi-football field size hole, and then you go in and you chip out the support pillars because they happen to be made out of coal, and you want that last little bit of coal, and it falls and it crashes in. That I suppose you could call that an earthquake because the earth is quaking, but
yeah, exactly. But the key thing is that the earthquake was caused by the retreat mining as it's dangerous. And it's called when you basically mine the coal from the pillars that hold the roof together.
Right.
And he kept denying that they had done retreat mining in that area, and the media should have pressed on and on. Did you do retreat mining? And yesterday the scientists began to say on TV that the Mine Safety and Health Administration knows the answer to that. So why not ask Richard Stickler, who incidentally was a recess appointment by George Bush, because not even the Republican Senate would approve him for this key job. And you had Alan Spencer, the senator from Pennsylvania, where Stickler was heading the Safety and Health Administration for the mines, speaking out against him. And this is the man who was in charge of the rescue operation, who is now going to be in charge of the investigation. And Keith Olbermann, I was on his show yesterday, was the first anchorman to really challenge who this man is.
Yeah. And really, in a way, this is the Mayan version of Hurricane Katrina. It's another example of how ideology has trumped rationality, and how if you don't believe in government, you can't govern.
Absolutely. And here, you know, we're talking about people's lives. And that's why, Tom, this is a teachable moment. You know, we have to take our teachable moments where we get them, unfortunately. And that's why it's important to stay on this story, because it's not just about the mines, important though that is. It's about all the issues of worker safety, worker rights, unions. This was not a unionized mine. Mari had spoken out again and again against unions, against protections, because he believed that these were basically affecting the coal industry, which they are and they should, because ultimately profits have been allowed to trump people's lives.
Right. And if coal costs a little bit more and people can mine it safely, so be it.
Exactly. Absolutely.
No industry in the United States should exist on the backs of the deaths of workers, period. I mean, we need as a society to say, if the only way that this business can function is by exploiting people or ultimately killing people, then it's a business that doesn't deserve to function.
Exactly, and we have to make these decisions, because that's really what we have government for and what we come together to address. And ultimately, if I can end with this thought, you know, the social scientists talk about upstream solutions and downstream solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, downstream solutions are what our culture is focusing on. You know, what do you do with the rescue effort? That's important. But the key questions are, what's happening at the top of the river? Why are so many bodies flowing down and we have to rescue them or save them? Why are they trapped in the mine in the first place?
Right, right. And why would this not happen in Canada, where all the mine workers are unionized and where they have safe rooms and they have food and oxygen and they have, a year and a half ago in a potash mine up there in Canada, you had a whole bunch of miners who were trapped for a very, very long period of time. They all walked out alive.
Yes, and that's part of the communication equipment that you have. We passed legislation for the communication equipment, but we gave them 3 years to put it in place, which is why they couldn't communicate with the trapped miners.
Yeah. Very well said. Arianna Huffington, thanks so much for being with us. The Huffington Post, your blog over there is extraordinary. I recommend everybody go to HuffingtonPost.com and read it. Thank you, Arianna.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Pete in Greeley, Colorado. Hey, Pete, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. It's just sheer evasive propaganda on the part of these mine owners and the media to be talking about seismic activity that's naturally caused. It's man-made. I'm a former coal miner. And as you retreat from these sections, you pull out the pillars. You're supposed to do that. It's supposed to cave behind you. you know, that relieves the overburden on the mine. The way they're framing up this issue is completely false, because they're always implying that it's some act of God that did this, and it's not. It's typical mining method.
So you pull out the pillars and let the roof collapse for what reason?
Because you're relieving the overburden on the rest of the mining operation. There's pressure. You're creating pressure when you go in there and you're taking out a seam. That seam of coal often lies between two big seams of shale and cap rock or sandstone that's very, very heavy. And as you take that out, well, that naturally wants to fall in.
Right.
Okay, so you want some of it to do that.
To relieve the pressure on the whole system.
Right, so you can imagine it, you know, as that caves in behind you, as you pull out, that's a desired effect that you want to have happen. The problem is, even in union mines, and I was in a union mine, these owners and foremen will get up there and they'll take a wet rag and put it over the meter on the mine, on the miner, which reads the gases and all the dangerous things that are in the atmosphere and the lack of oxygen, and that miner will automatically shut off if that meter's functioning, and they'll throw a damp rag over there and keep it, and they'll keep on mining. They do things like that all the time, Tom, and they get away with it sometimes even in union mines.
Right.
Well, so these mines that aren't union, you can bet they're going with the Bush administration, they're going the extra mile. I tell you, that's a dangerous mine. I have to speculate on that, but I bet my bottom dollar on it.
Yeah, and the agency that is supposed to overlook this is now being run by a Bush appointee with
conflict of interest. Exactly. You know,
yeah, who was so bad that the Senate would not even the Republicans in the Senate would not go along with this
joke.
Guy. Yeah, it's tragic. Pete, thank you very much for the call and for the heads up and for the information. Good to hear from you. 45 minutes past the hour. TomHartmann.com, our website, AirAmerica.com. If you want to participate in our blog, there's a link there as well to our live chat room. We'll be back with your phone calls, 866-303-2270, in just a moment. It's Friday. I'm broadcasting live from K-Talk in Los Angeles, where we'll be at the four different screenings tonight at the 11th hour, Leo DiCaprio's new movie.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartmann Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, special thanks to David Poole and Louise Hartman producing this program. Chris Lopresto normally running our board, Justin Ewan today, Lauren Kirshner in Air America, New York. John Fish driving me around Los Angeles today, helping out. Thank you, John. Sue Nethercutt running our chat room, all the folks in our chat room. And say hi to you and to our sponsors and our affiliates. We are grateful, I am grateful to all of you. We couldn't do this show without you. The White House pushing for private briefings for Petraeus, or from Petraeus. It continues. It's just getting very strange. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Eddie in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Eddie, what's up?
Hey, congratulations on the movie.
Thank you. We should
Can't
really
wait
congratulate
to
Leo. Leonardo DiCaprio. It's a tour de force. It's a brilliant movie.
Well, that goes to everyone. I can't wait till it comes to Dallas.
Yeah.
So,
what's up?
The news. Everybody, you know, talking about info news now. Do y'all remember back after the war ended and then we had the occupation start? After the occupation started, Bush squashed the news. He also gave $1 billion over to Iraq to only print good things coming out of Iraq.
Yeah, this was about the time that the Pentagon started their in-house propaganda department and
And so it's not the media's fault. They're really wanting... Hello?
Yeah, you're still here.
They are really wanting to put out the news. I know that you do. I know that... Every person in the news media that I've talked to, they want to, but they're not allowed to.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. The fact of the matter is, Eddie, that if you look over the last 20, 30 years, you see in newsrooms, in radio and television stations all around the country, in network television, foreign bureaus are being closed, staffs are being cut back, investigative reporting, as Dan Rather talked about in this program earlier this week, is virtually non-existent, because a lot of the time, you spend a lot of time and money doing an investigation, and you find out there's nothing to investigate there. You know, they really weren't the bad guys. And so, you know, for every investigative report that makes it on the air, there might be two or three that never did. It's not a highly profitable business. And infotainment is the name of the game. And that's, you know, all the more the tragedy, frankly. Terrence in Rancho Cucamonga.
Hey,
Terrence.
Hey, how are you? First, let me say, I disagree with, I guess, the whole liberal assumption about life, and I think it's a, you know, altogether it comes from a very genuine place, a place of wanting to do the right thing. But, you know, a lot of times never try to reach the long-term conclusion of whether it works. Like, for instance, with the mind, I heard you, and I don't want to misrepresent what you said or your position, but from what it seems like with one of the callers, it was like, well, because this particular industry is so dangerous and that there's some profit attached to it, that by virtue of that, if we can't assure that this kind of stuff would never, ever happen, then maybe the industry shouldn't exist.
Well, there's no such thing as a no-risk business. My point was that we know how to do mining in a much safer fashion. You don't do this kind of retreat mining. In fact, there's a quote from one of the mine guys saying, you know, that last little bit of coal that you pull out when you pull the pillars out, that's pure profit. And if the roof falls in, hey, that's great, because it covers up the evidence of the mining violations that happened while you were mining. My point is, if you can't do things within the state-of-the-art standards, if you can't protect the lives of workers to whatever the technology allows for, and that's changed over time. I mean, you know, 100 people, as I recall, died building the Brooklyn Bridge, and nowadays it would probably be, you know, zero or maybe one. I mean, you know, we've got cables and things that we hook to people to now. But if you're unwilling to run your business in a way that protects the lives of your workers, or frankly, let me go even farther, if you're unwilling to run your business in a way that pays your workers a living wage, then you have no right, in my opinion, to run a business.
Really?
Yeah,
so,
because running a business is not a God-given right. Running a business is a privilege that we as a society grant to those of us who have businesses. And I say that as a guy who has run businesses for 35 years.
Okay. So, I guess it's a privilege in that the federal government is involved in giving business licenses.
No, it's the state governments that do it.
Well, state government, in effect, is giving, you know. But, Tom, in all reality, man, you know, there's always going to be we have firefighters here in California. Five just got caught into a whole wall of fire, died. I mean, you know, there's going to be any time that it takes a human to actually do a job, there's inherent risk attached to it.
I agree.
And I think that, you know, maybe the, what you call the standards, or maybe some of the standards are just a little unrealistic apply to, you know, wanting to protect people, but not approaching that, well, this is the reality of this particular kind of work.
So let's say this guy who owns this mine in Utah made an extra $100,000 or $200,000 by his retreat mining, his, whatever they call his mining technique, grabbing the last little bit of coal. Is that worth nine lives?
Well, it's not worth nine lives, but I guess the greater question is, Tom, should that be illegal, in that he didn't force these guys to take the job? And I don't want to sound heartless, but my goodness, if he is running a shabby operation, nobody's preventing those workers or other people to yell from the mountaintop, hey, you don't want to work for this
actually
guy.
Terrence, life prevents that. People must work in the United States, particularly in the United States, because in the United States, if you don't work, if you get sick, you die because you got no health care. I mean, there is, you say, well, people have a choice if they want to take a job. Well, sort of. You know, a lot of people, you know, you get right down to it, yeah, they have the choice of taking the job and having their family survive and feeding their kids, or they have the choice of not taking the job and letting their children starve. I mean, come on. Coming up tomorrow, Monday, on the Tom Hartman program here, Michael Chapman dropping by to debate whether universities should shut down because of student protests of military recruiters. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.